False Face, Ernest Haycox, the Project Gutenberg ebook of False Face. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. Title: False Face, Author: Ernest Haycox. Release date: September 26, 2025. Ebook 76931. Language: English. Original publication: New York, NY, Street and Smith Corporation, 1926. Other information and formats: www.gutenberg.org/ebook/76931. Credits: Roger Frank and Sue Clark. Asterisk: Start of the Project GUTENBERG EBOOK. False Face, Asterisk: False Face, by Ernest Haycox, author of A Good Man to Lie For, etc. "Now listen, you gall-derned, slab-footed curmudgeon," exclaimed Sheriff Bart McKenzie. "You're going to take the depity star I give you. Don't want to hear no more objections. It's my duty and privilege to draft and swear in whomsoever I choose. You ain't got no right to stand there and tell me you feel disinclined to serve your country. It's a downright perversion of public spirit, and I'm not a-going to stand for it. Don't want nothing to do with it," repeated old Dave Budd with a still greater vehemence. "Ain't going to go around with that hunko tin on my shirt looking like a dumb fool." "Fool?" roared Bart McKenzie. "I take it I look like a fool fur carrying my star, then. You're a duly elected sheriff," explained Bud. "People wanted you to serve, or they wouldn't have voted you in. As for me, I'm a fat old man and my fightin' days are plumb past. Get yourself some young and spry feller that likes to ride saddle all night long, or live on a slice o' bacon 4 days runnin'. Me, I got to have more comfort in my old age, Bart." The sheriff neatly strung together a series of strong words. "Why, you idiot, you're no older'n me. Call 48 old. Howsomever, I ain't asking you to track no criminals across the desert. You don't have to. Your word is pretty much law in these parts, anyhow." "Well, that bane so," replied Bud. "Why should I have to wear a gall-derned piece o' soldered tin on my shirt? Now you listen to me, old-timer. I got my own way o' dispensin' such justice as these parts need. It don't have anything to do with totin' a badge around, either." "Why, that set all my folks agin me, Bart. No, sir, you let me be. We're real peaceful at this end o' the country and don't need no depities. When suthin' outrageous happens, you get here soon enough, anyhow." Mackenzie opened the clasp of the deputy's badge and got hold of Bud's dusty vest. "Ain't listenin' to no more palaver," he said, snorting. "I'm a-goin' to brand you right now, critter. There, depity Bud, you're a handsome-lookin' peace officer." The storekeeper's huge face was wreathed in a scowl as he stared at the trinket of authority on his vest. "It's all terrible foolish," said he. "What might I look after, jack rabbits and coyotes?" "You old maverick," said the sheriff in placating tones. "I been lettin' you alone fur a good while, but now's time fur some serious work. Just take a look out in your front pasture, and I reckon you'll know what I'm depitizin' you for." Bud had no need to glance through his front door. The invasion had descended upon him a week ago in the form of broken-down farm wagons, old-time schooners, buggies, pack mules, and solitary riders on every shade and size of horse. Mostly it was a family affair. The clearing in front of the store was dotted with tents and lean-tos and stray baggage and fires. Men clustered in groups, speaking guardedly or else in heated discussion, while the women bustled about the flames and prepared the night meal. Even as the storekeeper scanned the group, he heard the creaking of fresh wagons through the trees. They came from every corner of the state and from adjoining states, rough people and refined, all eager to share in a new prospect of comfort and prosperity. The cause of this boom was a mere rumor, a thin, unsubstantiated report that the government, long idle in this part of central Oregon, was about to dam a distant river in the hills and construct great main canals to irrigate the land. Bud shook his head solemnly. It was, he repeated to himself, only a rumor, and rumors had ugly ways of dying out, never again to be heard. Nevertheless, these hopeful people came, camped in his clearing, while preliminary scouts were sent out to find land that had not been homesteaded, and then vanished through the jack pines, bound for their new El Dorado, somewhere beyond in the open country. "Reminds me of the old days in Oklahoma," said Bud. "Dang me if there wasn't a rush for the Indian lands. I can still hear the bugles sound for the sign we could cross in. By golly, reckon I was younger then." "Nem mind that sad extemporizin," interrupted the sheriff. Just foller my ideas a spell. You see that red-headed young man with the scowl on his face? I want you should keep an eye on him, bud. Folks have been complaining about lossin, money and valuables from their wagons and sleepin' places during the night. Well now, he's a reckless-lookin' son of a gun, and he's been hangin' round these diggins for a week, ain't he? Bud chuckled. Huh, it's a girl that keep him glued here, not money. Powerful suspicious-lookin' to me, Dave. You keep an eye on him. I've been sizin' the whole crowd up, and he's the only one I'd figure to watch. All right, agreed the storekeeper, turning morose again. Got to be a cussed bloodhound, have I? The red-headed young man evidently had something on his mind. He fished through his pockets and fumbled among the few effects piled on the ground by his saddle. Rising empty-handed, he turned toward the store. The sheriff clapped on his sombrero and started out. "Al vamos, Dave, and let you alone until next week." He climbed into the saddle as the young man swung to the porch. The sheriff's horse, catching sight of a skittering sheet of white paper, reared and snorted, plunged against a porch column, knocked a board off with his feet, and drummed out of the clearing. "Huh," exclaimed the young man. "What's he aiming to do, make a fence jumper out of that cayuse?" "Horse is just a mite skittish," said Bud mildly. He opened a fresh box of tomatoes and began packing the cans to the shelf. Halfway, he stopped to observe. "Horses are plumb like women that-a-way. Purdy, but skittish." "Yeah," said the young man, suddenly looking harassed. "Ain't it the solemn and miserable truth?" He took off his Stetson and scratched his flaming thatch. By no means could he be called handsome, with his pugnacious chin and nose, his slate-gray eyes, and his gaunt, weather-worn frame. It seemed as if he might have been recently subjected to an illness, for he seemed a little nervous and finely drawn. "Yeah," he muttered. "I'll tell a man it's so. First you're it, and then you ain't." His eyes were fixed on a couple that moved in and out of the trees. Bud chuckled at the tomato cans and blandly asked, "What you say, Bill? First you're it, and the next thing the earth ain't big enough to hold you." He wrinkled his nose in surprise. "How'd you know my first moniker?" "Heard a gal call you by it," said Bud. "Huh, you won't hear her callin' me that no more. Oh no, she don't know I'm a human bane these days." He was talking as if half to himself, still keeping his slate-gray eyes fixed on the couple. They had advanced from the main road and were twining around the wagons and fires, a sturdy girl and a tall man in chaps. "Huh," he muttered. Then again, "Huh, gimme a sack of tobacco, Bud. What road do I take out o' this country? South, I mean." "Leavin'?" queried Bud. "Well, just keep to the main way and you'll strike Klamath byne-by." "Yuha," said Bill. He rolled a cigarette, licked it, and reached for a match. "Thanks." He leaned against the counter and drew a mouthful of smoke. Bud saw his face turn perfectly bland and cheerful. There was a gay burst of laughter and a man's short speech. The couple came in the door. The girl, foremost, stopped short at sight of Bill, looked at him and through him, her smile disappeared and a color came to her cheeks. Bill drew a deep draft of smoke and spoke to Bud as if continuing the conversation. "Yeah, first thing in the morning, I guess. This country don't strike me so much. Guess you'd better lay aside a can o' them tomatoes and some bacon. I'll be back for the duffel later." "Don't let me interfere with your business," said the girl haughtily. "Sam and I are only visiting." "Oh no," said Bill in sprightly tones. "There ain't room enough for all of us in such a small place." He walked by her and approached Sam. He had to look up a little to meet Sam's eyes. The man was tall, his accoutrements were neat, and his clothes well-kept. He had a face that, to the genial and shrewd Bud, seemed as uncommunicative as any a man could boast. It rarely smiled, and it rarely displayed emotion. To cap off the expression, Sam was exceedingly sparing of his words. Bill ground his cigarette on the floor and spoke shortly, but to the point. "So Sam's the moniker, huh?" "Yeah." "Don't open your mouth too wide, Sam, or you'll show a tooth. Shucks, they named you wrong. It ought to be paralyzed." "Yeah, yeah," affirmed Bill. He stepped back a trifle, teetered on his heels, and swung his arms idly, the slate-gray eyes boring into the big fellow. Sam remained unconcerned. His face was perfectly impassive. It irked Bill. He snorted once, twice, and moved out of the door humming a tune to show his perfect indifference. "Oh," exclaimed the girl. "Did you ever see such an overbearing man?" She looked at her escort a little curiously. "What did you think?" Sam seemed to ponder. "Didn't want to hit him," said he lazily. "Might hurt him." "Yes," responded the girl. Bud, keeping his own counsel as to that eventuality, thought he heard a minor chord of doubt in the girl's voice. "Well," said she, "I think we'd better run along and let Mr. Bud alone. It's getting dark. Supper's ready." Bud watched them go across the clearing, the girl waving her hand here and there to friends, the man bending a little under his height and moving as if he had all the time in creation. Finally, they parted and disappeared in the shadows. The storekeeper set his shelves in order and cruised to the kitchen to make supper. It was not a complex operation, consisting of slicing a few potatoes into a pan and dropping several strips of bacon alongside to lard the frying. For the main part, Bud's mind ran along its habitual channels, prying a little here and pondering a little there. What kind of a man was this wooden-faced Sam, anyway? No, not wooden-faced, corrected Bud. Poker-faced was the better term. It was not the ordinary thing for a man to value his emotions and expressions so highly that he turned himself into a sphinx. You never could tell about those fellows, whether they wanted to give you a present or sink a slug of lead into you. Bud stirred his coffee and chuckled. Now, Bill was a fellow that wasn't made to conceal much of anything. He had a fighting face, and to judge from his last speech with Sam, he had a fighting heart. Certainly, he was badly taken with the girl, and she hadn't found him so distasteful until the last day or two, at which period Sam had ridden into the scene. No, Bill had seemed to be the favored one until a quarrel blew up. What it was, Bud didn't know or care. He had seen many such spring up and die away. He ate his meal, washed down a good many cups of coffee, and treated himself to a cigar from the shelves. In striking the match, his hands came upon the metal of the deputy's badge, and he snorted in plain disgust. Shucks, going to be a gall-darned snooper. Dave Budd, I'm plumb ashamed of your unhandsome behavior. Paradin, around like a monkey on a stick. It was in his mind to pin the thing inside his vest, but having once taken the obligation, he found himself unable to hedge. He stepped down the porch and sauntered forward. The fires veered and danced in the late twilight. A fog sank over the treetops, bringing with it a clammy touch. For the most part, the people had finished with their supper and were now lying around, spinning yarns and weaving dreams. It was a time for babies to be cooing in the wagons, half asleep, for the younger boys and girls to be out among the shadows playing hide and seek. One darted up to Bud and used the storekeeper's vast bulk for a momentary refuge. A guitar strummed and a couple intoned a song about Sweet Genevieve. It struck directly to the hearts of all the middle-aged in that particular circle and voices died away. Bud moved on with a feeling of compassion. These were his people, his kind of men and women. Then he saw Bill squatting, Indian fashion, before a solitary little blaze. No kumpnai, said Bud. Bill nodded his head to the group 10 yards beyond. Sam's there tellin' the gall-darndest stories. I don't need no kumpnai when I can listen in on them yarns. Sam was, indeed, relaxing from his taciturnity. He sat with his feet crossed and illustrated his yarn with a jerky motion of his fingers and arms, greatly resembling Indian sign language. The girl sat across from him, her chin cupped in a palm, sometimes looking to him and sometimes away. Bud wondered if she had deliberately put her back to Bill. Spec so, he thought, chuckling, and went on. His last glimpse was of her staring somberly into the fire. He paid his compliments here and there, answered a question or two, and returned to the house. It was pretty late, and he had worked rather hard. In 10 minutes he had found his bed and was fast asleep. Bud's manner of slumber was an inheritance from early range days. No matter how exhausted, he had trained himself to wake at the least untoward sound. So it was that an unusual commotion out among the wagons around midnight brought him up instantly. A moment later he was diving into his clothes upon hearing the repeated bark of a revolver. A man's voice lashed out in the night, calling down all the wrath of heaven. A dog began to howl dismally, and a woman screamed. Bud, forging to the porch, saw the glimmer of a newly lighted lantern and heard the mumble of a gathering crowd. He walked over to the scene where a dozen sleepy men had gathered. The lantern, held high, revealed an irate and whiskered citizen waving a gun and shouting, "I'll get the ornery sneak. Come right into my wagon, by Gollis. Snuck the wallet from under my coat." He saw Bud and reiterated his charge. "You got to do something about this, Mr. Bud. Took $410 right from Ann under my nose, by Gollis. Just stuck his hand through the canvas and helped himself." A murmur ran through the group. $400 was a large sum of money, and the manner of taking had been audacious. The thief had obviously threaded his way around sleeping bodies until he found the wagon. Equally obvious was it that he must have spent some few days in observing the robbed man's habits. "That's a pretty tidy sum of money," ventured one. Bud's vast presence seemed to absorb responsibility like a blotter. To a man, they turned their attention his way. He walked to the wagon. "Stuck his arm through here?" he asked. On affirmation, he plunged his own burly hand through the slit. "Put your coat right where it was when the money was took." The man climbed inside and did as requested. Bud pawed around the wagon bed. "You sure that's where you had it?" "By Gollis, don't I know? Sure." Bud shoved the weight of his body against the canvas, and by dint of an extra lunge, his fingers touched the coat. He said to himself, that feller's arm was right long to do things so quick and quiet. He turned. What kind o' wallet? How'd you have the money? One o' these twice-fold-over dinguses. It was black leather. My wife gave it to me as a present 9 years ago. Nine, wasn't it, Carrie? Yep, sure. $410 in greenbacks. 16 20s and the rest 10s. He sat down weakly and ran a hand over his head. By gollus, I don't know what to do about it. Powerful lot o' money to lose. The crowd moved again. Sam's tall, impassive presence stood forth. This ain't the first time, he added significantly. Stealin' been going on for 3 days. Just little things. Other lanterns arrived, and the circle became fairly well illuminated. Bud swept the faces, and for the first time made out Bill and his flaming red thatch standing silent and speculative with his slate-gray eyes fixed on Sam. Got to stop, continued Sam. What I say is, search every man here and search his duffel. There was a dubious approval. Men bent their mind to the feasibility of it. A voice murmured, sounds kinda severe, but I'd be willin'. Only way, asserted Sam. Got to stop it now. Any man to object SH to be considered guilty. A dry answer met this. Bill rubbed his red crest and stuck out his chin. Go lay down, paralyzed. Your voice makes me tired. Moreover, your idea is plumb foolish. Search the whole camp. Shucks, the man that got this money ain't an entire fool. He's cashed it away by now. Mean to say, countered Sam in the same unexpressive drawl, you're unwillin'? You're brained as you credit. I said that and I mean that. Don't care about a lot o' loose fingers pockin' through my war bag. The chin seemed to advance a little farther. Those slate-gray eyes fired a plain challenge at the big man, but Bill had reckoned without the sudden, unanimous spirit that sometimes takes hold of a crowd. A pair of arms pinioned him around the waist, and the circle closed in like a rubber band. See about that, young fella, cried one. The few women withdrew quickly. Bud, still a spectator, saw the girl's troubled face by the lantern's gleam. Then she was gone. Somebody took upon himself the task of inspecting Bill's clothes, and for his pains found nothing. Sam's curiously disinterested voice pointed the search in another direction. His war bag, boys, better look there. Two or three left the circle with a lantern. Bud, waiting, found time to study Sam's face again and was compelled to mutter admiringly, ain't that a poker expression, though? Bill was plainly outraged and bucked in his captor's arm. Boys, you better hold tight. Dadgum my soul, somebody's going to dance fur this. Hi, boys, here's the wallet all right. Take a look, fella, that it? The crowd moved over, the robbed one identified his wallet with a brightening eye, and the crowd turned upon Bill with a satisfied sigh. Now, Red, you're in poor company. Better cough up the money or we'll get plumb mad. Bill stared around him in plain disgust. His gaze fell upon the cool and aloof Sam. Paralyzed, I sure give you credit for Bane, the little detective. Then he grew sober. Oh, go home, you galoots, and get a night's sleep. I got nobody's money. Can't you see it was planted? That's terrible old stuff. Gamblers used to pull that in Montana when I was a little boy. They were all silent and ominous. Someone spoke the popular opinion. Talkin' ain't helpin' your case at all, Red. Figure you like to dance a jig in the cold night air? Don't be foolish. Where's the man's money? Bill snorted in anger. Money? I tell you I ain't got the money. Was sleepin' peaceful-like when some ornery maverick stepped in my face and hollered there was a wallet missin'. Once again silence and finally a slow, hesitant suggestion. Meb a roped help things out considerable, boys, Bud elected to become active. He put out his two arms and moved a half dozen men out of his path in the manner of one shoving aside the branches of a tree. Reckon the talk is getting a leetle wild, friends. When a gent says, rope, the time's come for a might o' mature reflection. Speakin' as de pity sheriff, I guess I'll just take the boy in hand. Meb a few hours thought'll change his mind. Don't need no reflection, muttered somebody. Need rope. Ain't going to be sidetracked this away. The measly cuss stole a man's hard-earned money, and it ain't to be tolerated in these parts. I'm for summary justice. Ain't caring what you're for, stated Bud in flat finality. Anybody wishing to doubt my authority? Somehow in the lantern light, the man had become as a mountain of purpose. His face, which in daylight looked bland and cherubic, was rock hard. He spoke easily and his movements were deliberate, but there was no single man to raise a voice in further protest. Bill, you just march in front of me to the store. Rest, oh, you night birds walk around a while and cool off. Don't get no queer ideas about rope and tree limbs. I don't aim to tolerate foolishness. We'll stick to plain law. He marched Bill into the storeroom, shut the door, and put his lantern on the counter. Regardless of circumstances and greenback bills, said he, I reckon I'll have to tie you up for the night. Don't aim to make it any harder on you than I have to. There's blankets on the floor. Get down on 'em, young feller. I'll bundle you up so's it won't bind you. This, said Bill in a kind of restrained fury, is plumb unreasonable and aggravatin'. First I get my face stepped on, and next they want to lynch me. Now I got to be wound up like a roll of fence wire. Bud clucked his tongue. Sure's enough to make a man swear. Get down, Bill, now take it easy. But sometimes certain moves lead to certain other moves. Bill submitted to the operation. Yeah, ain't that as clear as mud? First you put out your right foot and then your left. But if I never do anything else in my life, I'm sure going to change that Waddy Sam's complexion. I sure am. He rested, finally, with his arms and legs more or less tightly bound, and yet Bud had done the trussing cleverly enough to allow the prisoner a certain comfort on his hard bed. Then he strung the free end of the rope through the kitchen door and tied it to a leg of the range. Reckon if you go to thrashing around too much, he observed, I'll hear the stove creaking. Now I aim to finish off a little business of 6 hours' sleep. Bill surveyed his bonds and cast a candid eye upon his captor. Now listen, hombre, if a man wanted to wiggle out o' this, Bud looked him in the eye. You dang fool, he muttered. You dang fool. The captive closed his mouth and opened his eyes a little wider. After a few moments' silence, he muttered, oh. Then he turned his back to the big storekeeper and fell silent. Bud was as inscrutable as a Chinese idol. He picked up the lantern, went back to his bedroom, and blew out the light. Feel a lot easier in the conscience, he muttered, if I didn't have this cussed piece o' tin. He stared at the ceiling and presently was asleep. No more strange sounds from the wagons awoke him that night, and if the kitchen range creaked, he gave no notice that he was aware of it. Yet he seemed fated to be wakened by another noisy event. When gray dawn seeped into the clearing, a file of excited men trooped through the house, banged at his door, and brought him up from the pillow with one trenchant question. War's your prisoner? Bud yawned and reached for his pipe. Guess you'll find him sleepin' behind the counter where I tied him. A sarcastic rumble greeted this. Yes, we will. Of all the fool ideas, he shucked himself out o' that rope and vamosed. The storekeeper's heavy lids drooped. He fumbled with his tobacco pouch and muttered, why don't say? Then he slid into his clothes and led the impromptu committee back to the storeroom. True enough, his bird had fled. The free end of the rope still was tied around a stove log, but the rest of it was slit in a dozen places. The cheese knife, which ordinarily rested on the counter, was stuck in the floorboards, mute witness of Bill's manner of passage. Bud ruefully clucked his tongue. Slick and clean. There's a dumb good $6 piece o' rope made worthless. How you're a sweet to pity. Should have let well enough alone last night. Now what are you going to do? Bud picked up the knife and sliced himself a piece of the cheese. Well now, first I aim to eat, then I aim to take care o' the store, then meb I'll do a little figurin', might even send word to Mackenzie to keep a lookout at his end o' the county. Come back later and I'll tell you the rest. Meanwhile, stated one of the committee, he's scootin' with $400 of this man's hard-earned money. Terrible. They conferred among themselves, found Bud strangely imperturbable and went out, unsatisfied. The storekeeper cruised back and got his morning meal. As the day wore on, he found part of his duty performed for him. The more determined of the landseekers organized a posse and galloped up the road toward Bend. Around noon, they came back with nothing for their efforts. A few beat into the Jack Pines a half mile or so and returned empty-handed. Bud, standing on his porch, gave them a few choice words of advice. Takes an experienced hand to find anything in the brush. Not much good in your tactics. They chose not to give up the pursuit and after dinner again scoured the road, this time to the south. Bud was not much interested in these movements. Such time as he spent on the porch was used to keep a shrewd watch over the girl and Sam. The latter had not elected to go with the posse, but at one point in the afternoon he picked up his gun and, seeming to have a plan of his own, marched directly into the pines and was lost for the best part of an hour. The girl, who had been idling around her wagon, watched him go and after a short interval vanished up the road. She was back in a little while, coming directly to the store. Mr. Bud, this is dreadful. Do you suppose anyone will find him? If they do, they'll be sure to shoot. That's the portion of thieves, ain't it? But he's not a thief. Then she seemed to collect herself, and a color rose in her cheeks. No, I don't believe he did it. I don't believe it. Thought you didn't think so much of him. Oh, that, we may have been quarreling, but I know him to be an honest man. How long have you known him? Why, we met on the road about a week ago. She saw a question in the storekeeper's face and flushed again. It doesn't take a woman forever to judge, you know. If Bill chooses to run off, I'm sure I have no reason to worry about his affairs. She spoke it primly, unaware that her eyes told another story. but I'm quite sure he'd not be a sneak thief. The girl changed the subject abruptly and asked a question about homesteading. Bud turned to one of his never-failing stories and kept drawling away until he saw Sam duck into the clearing and make for the store. He sighed, fingered the deputy's star on his vest, and turned toward the cigar box which served as his cash till. Storekeepin used to be a nice quiet trade until this boom hit me. Now I got to be a regular bookkeeper. He was shuffling a pile of paper bills on the counter when Sam came in. Your prisoner, said he in the same lazy voice, is a slick one. Got plumb clean. 25, 30, 45, counted Bud, thumbing the bills. You been chasing him, too. Thought I had a scent, but it petered out. Sam's eyes followed Bud's pile of money. He's ducked. What I can't see is why he didn't make a stab to get his duffel and horse. $89.53, tabulated Bud, rumbling to himself. He made a few weird scratches with a stub pencil and thrust the money carelessly back in the cigar box. Sam watched the operation with his poker face, blandly uninterested. Well, continued Bud, he'll be caught sooner or later. They always do. Never saw a crook get far yet. That's right, assented Sam. He turned to the girl. Care to amble around and scare up an appetite? Yes, said she. Her eyes were likewise fixed on the cigar box. A swift look went to Bud. He was slivering off another piece of cheese, intent on the process. So the two walked out and circled around the wagons. The storekeeper put the cigar box on the counter, ransacked the shelves for writing paper, and sat down to compose a rather long letter. He was not a rapid pen man, and before he had finished, night once more was upon the clearing with the fires sending their veering tongues of flame to the black sky. He went back to the kitchen, got something to eat, and sat down for a long, dark study over the tip of his cigar. Alternately, he chuckled and frowned. That girl, said he, is sure a case. Been playing Sam again, Bill to even up a quarrel, and now she's terrible sorry, just like what a woman do. He looked down at the star and was acutely displeased. This thing sure sets on my mind. If I was just an ordinary citizen, it wouldn't be such a risky experiment. Bane, an officer, makes my conscience troubled, and that's a fact. He went to the front door and swung his lantern idly to and fro, passing a glance at the wagons in which most of the landseekers were now asleep. Then he turned back, still swinging the light so that anyone looking through the open portal might see him, and passed to the kitchen. There he blew out the lantern, turned about, and tiptoed to the front room. He took up the blanket, wrapped it around him, and sat down behind the counter with his back to the shelves and his revolver in his hand. Presently he dozed off and dreamed of his boyhood in Pennsylvania. He seemed, after a time, to have trouble with his dream. It was winter, and he was skating with his young companions on the ice. There was a crack in the middle of the pond and a danger sign pointing from it. But he felt as if he could safely dare that sign, so he skated to the very edge and turned away. He had been too bold. There was a sharp cracking of the ice, and he woke with both eyes fixed upward. The illusion of cracking ice had been made by a loose board creaking under a weight. Bud took a firmer grip on his gun and breathed softly. Again, the board registered protest, not a loud sound, but enough to tell the storekeeper that the bait in his trap found a willing stalker. Something very slight swept over the counter surface and struck the cigar box with an audible tick. Bud made out a dark, moving shadow in the gloom. He hoisted his body with surprising celerity and quickly snapped the revolver forward. Freeze right in your tracks, he commanded. Hands above your head. Hurry now. The command was not obeyed. Bud, peering closely, saw the intruder's weapon arm streak downward. He moved aside and shook his head under the stunning crash of gunfire. A little finger of orange blue momentarily flashed in his face. He jumped, and again the room shook under heavy echoes. The intruder let out a great breath of air as if he had been punched in the stomach, pawed at the counter, and seemed to dissolve. First the gun struck the floor, then the body collapsed, muttering, "Got me, you sly old fox." All was still. Then the wagons came to life and a few landseekers ran up to the store. A lantern swung and winked. Bud lighted his own lantern and bent over the intruder. It was the man he had supposed, Sam, his long body sprawled awkwardly on the boards, his face white and wholly without expression, staring toward the storekeeper. He was dead. In falling, he had pulled the cigar box with him, whose contents of greenbacks now scattered over the floor. The landseekers crowded into the room, and the assembled lanterns made a great light. It was a story too plain to need explanation, and in the silence, Bud ventured his mild explanation. I knew it was this feller all the time, and not Bill, said he, but I wasn't plumb sure. So I arranged to let Bill escape and baited my trap with the money in the cigar box. Sam saw it and sprung the trap, sure enough. Why'd you let the other fella go? Inquired one. Bud smiled and pushed through to the porch. He expanded his lungs and bellowed at the pine trees. "Oh, Bill, she's all settled." Then he made further explanations. "I don't know that he's hereabouts, but I'm figuring so. He ain't the kind to run off thout trying to clear his name, and I guessed he'd try to catch Sam in the act o' catching the money somewheres in the woods, or else raising the cash." Footsteps thumped on the porch, and Bill, drenched with the night dew and tousle-haired, came up. "You old son of a gun," said he. "You're purty shrewd. I figured you'd make a play like that. Saw it in your face last night." He held out his hand for a cigarette. "When morning comes, I'll show you where Sam hid the $400. I was in the brush and saw him go to the place this afternoon. That's when all the boys were threshing the thicket for me. Shucks, don't you know it's a hard job to catch an old hand in the brush?" There was a call from the porch, a woman's urgent command. "Bill," Bill grinned. "Reckon she's been trying to clear me, too. Tried to follow Sam this afternoon, but got lost and ran plump into me." "Still mad, is she?" asked Bud. Bill passed him a wink and elbowed his way out of the room. Transcriber's note. This story appeared in the February 13, 1926 issue of Western Story Magazine. End of the project GUTENBRG EBOOK False Face Asterisk. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed. Creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright. Law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works, so the Foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules, set forth in the General Terms of Use part of this license, apply to copying and distributing project Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the project GUTMBRGTM. Concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook, except by following the terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away. You may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start. Full license. The full Project GUTMBRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg. You agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg electronic work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property. Trademark Copyright Agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg electronic works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg electronic work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E8(1B). Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. See paragraph 1C below. There are a lot of things you can do with Project Gutenberg electronic works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg electronic works. See paragraph 1E below, 1C. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the Foundation, or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg electronic works. Nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, we do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1d. The copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing, or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1e. Unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg. 1e1. The following sentence with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work, on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated, is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1e2. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to a work with the phrase Project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 or obtain permission for the use of the work and the Project Gutenberg trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1E8 or 1E9. 1E3. If an individual Project Gutenberg electronic work is posted with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the Project Gutenberg license for all works posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work. 1E4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full Project Gutenberg license terms from this work or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with Project Gutenberg. 1E5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1E1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the Project Gutenberg license. 1E6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary, compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a Project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official Project Gutenberg website, www.gutenberg.org, you must, at no additional cost, fee, or expense, to the user provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original plain vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full Project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1E7. Do not charge a fee for access to, viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any Project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9. 1E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing Project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of Project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the project, Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the project, Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in Section 4, Information about donations to the project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that /he does not agree to the terms of the full Project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of Project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in Section 3 below, 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe, and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as but not limited to incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright or other intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1F2. Limited warranty, disclaimer of DAMAGES, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, and any other party distributing a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract, except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the foundation, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive, or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1F3. Limited right of replacement or refund. If you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you received the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you received the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1F4. Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth in paragraph 1F3, this work is provided to you as is with no other warranties of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to warranties of merchantability or fitness for any purpose. 1F5. Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1F6. Indemnity. you agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone, providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement, and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur: a distribution of this or any Project Gutenberg work; b, alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work; and c, any defect you cause. Section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life. Volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org. Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit, 501(c)(3) educational corporation organized under the laws of the state of Mississippi and granted tax exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN or federal tax identification number is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Watchung Plaza 516, Montclair NJ 7042, USA, plus 1-862-621-9288. Email contact links and up-to-date contact information can be found at the foundation's website and official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact. Section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. Section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the Project Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the US unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper edition. Most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks.